Yo, what up though? They say all good things must come to an end, and tragically, the NBA season has come to an end. It is the final night of the regular season in the National Basketball Association, and we're going to break down everything that happened this year on the latest edition of the preseason podcast of the year. Welcome to the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. For those of you who do not know me, my name is Jay Hicks, and we host this podcast here. It's an audio extension of HipHopSportsReport.com, the dopest website in all the internets. All right, so go ahead and check us out, HipHopSportsReport.com. Also, you can hit us on Twitter at HHSReport, and we got a lot to get into tonight. Wanted to touch on, again, the entire NBA season, and we're going to do a little bit of talking about the movie Draft Day. I saw Draft Day over the weekend, so I'm going to share some thoughts and some insights that I had from watching that film and watching my beloved Cleveland Browns actually look good on draft night. That was a nice change of pace. So we'll get into that momentarily. But first, I want to start off with the NBA. Season's over, y'all. I mean, it's hard to believe it's already come and gone. October 31st or whenever the season started, that was a long time ago. And I think I'm going to go ahead and recap everything that was on the website. Now, all the predictions on the website for the 2013-14 NBA season were made by yours truly. So I highly encourage you to go back to HipHopSportsReport.com, check them out in detail. And, you know, just as part of some, you know, full disclosure here, because I feel like a lot of people don't really do that these days. A lot of times you see people on TV, talking heads, whoever, people who run websites, they make these brash predictions just to try to get clicks and or to get viewers and eyeballs or whatever, and then they're not held accountable for what they say. They go on television or they do their podcast, whatever they do, and they make these random, just ludicrous, outrageous prognostications just to try to entice you to listen. And we don't do that here. We try to give you what's real. No, we don't try. We do give you what's real. That's exactly what we do. And so, you know, not everything's right, but we've been doing this for this website for almost 2 years now, coming up on 2 years this summer. And the podcast is not that old, it's less than 6 months old. But I like to hold myself accountable because it makes me feel like I'm doing my work on the front end when I go out and make these predictions and stick my neck out on the line. I'm not always right, but I'm going to hold myself accountable. And I want you to know that I think I know what I'm talking about. And so we'll start by going back. And at the end of this, we're going to get into the official definitive preseason podcast of the year, HipHopSportsReport.com NBA Awards. We'll get into that down at the end of the segment. But first, we're going to go back and we're going to look at our division by division predictions. Now, we started with the Atlantic Division. Who do we have winning that? I believe we had the Brooklyn Nets winning that division, I believe. And if I'm not mistaken, the Raptors actually pulled that off. I'm a little surprised by that. We actually had the Raptors missing the playoffs narrowly. That was what was said at the start of the year. Yep, Toronto edged Brooklyn by about four games. It looks like something like that. And that's because Brooklyn started off in the tank. They were garbage the first couple of months of the season, but they righted the ship. I thought Brooklyn and New York were both going to right the ship and eventually make the playoffs, and Brooklyn ended up doing so, and the Knicks, well, they're just the Knicks, so what can you say about them? You can say a lot about them, but we'll digress. I'll touch on it briefly. We had the Knicks making the playoffs, and I said that if, let's see, I'm literally looking at the article right now. I said the Knicks should likely make the playoffs once again, but they would get bounced in the first round. And so they actually did us all a favor. Instead of wasting everybody's time, they just bowed out a couple of weeks even before that. And so those are your New York Knicks for you. And to quickly get the other bums out of the way, the Philadelphia 76ers, I said what the future holds for them was Andrew Wiggins. That's exactly what I said. And so we'll see if that actually comes true. But the bottom line is they were going to the top of the lottery fast. And that's the only business they had for the entire season. The 76ers, by design, were unbelievably terrible this year. And I guess Philly fans should be happy because they executed the plan to perfection. That was the plan by Sam Hinkie, the general manager. And it worked. They put a rookie coach out there with a bunch of kids, and they stunk, and that was by design. So the Celtics, I also had the Celtics missing the playoffs. Really not much to say there. They had a rookie coach. They had a team that was low on talent and high on draft lottery expectations or aspirations. So congratulations, Danny Ainge, on deliberately submarining your season. And Toronto, once again, I said Valanciunas needed to develop, and I thought it was a good move that they stole Masai. I never know how to say his name. The general manager from Denver. Y'all know who I'm talking about. Masai. They swiped him from the Nuggets, Toronto did. And I thought that this season was going to be... It was going to really come down to Jonas and Terrence Ross. Valanciunas, he got that DUI a couple of weeks ago. He's actually been playing pretty well since then. So, go figure. And Terrence Ross has stepped up nicely this year. One player I didn't mention was Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry did not get a mention in the article, but he's been fantastic this year. And Toronto... We'll get into Toronto's chances going forward and every team's chances going forward. I'm going to write a piece, a playoff preview later in the week, and that'll get posted to the website to get you ready and let you know everything you need to know about the NBA playoffs from our perspective, because our perspective is the best perspective, right? No, I'm not going to say that. We're not better than anybody here. We just like to think we are in our own head. Like that Ray Cash song, I'm a pimp in my own mind. A pimp. Okay. That's okay for all my Cleveland people. They're gonna get that reference. I'm not sure about everybody else. Anyway, so yeah, not much to say about Boston and Toronto. Like I said, I don't know how far they'll go down the road, but I thought they could make the playoffs if they caught a couple breaks, and they did. And then Brooklyn was the team that I had as the favorite. I said they needed a heart transplant. That's what I said at the end of last year when they lost in the playoffs to Chicago, who had nobody left. They were playing season ticket holders and off the bench. Chicago was last year, and they still managed to get out the first round. I had Brooklyn saying they needed a heart transplant. They went out and got KG and Paul Pierce, so they done some good in the heart department, and it's worked. They showed a little pride in the second half of the season, and they were able to bounce back. So they didn't win a division. I was off there, but. But Brooklyn, I think most people would probably agree, is still the best team in that division going into the playoffs. Central Division, boy, I butchered this one pretty good. I had a lot of faith in my Cleveland Cavaliers, and they let me down, unfortunately. Not a good year from the start. Mike Brown had a terrible season. Kyrie Irving, I love Kyrie Irving. Kyrie's a really good kid from my interactions with him, even. I've had a chance to talk to him a couple of times. He's actually a really nice guy. But he's just, I think the expectations and that just come with being a leader of a franchise at 21 years old kind of got to him down the stretch. And the team was sabotaged from jump. Mike Brown just still, even after going out to LA, taking a year off, coming back, still doesn't know how to coach offense, which is amazing to me. And they never did anything to try to rectify that, really. And so you had this thing with Waiters and Kyrie. And what I said in the article was, they need to learn how to play off one another, and they didn't do it. By the time they tried to do it, it was too late, and the season was already gone. So, and Anthony Bennett didn't work out too well either, although I would not completely write off Anthony Bennett going forward. I think it's easy to do that now, but I would not do that. I think he still has some potential. Derrick Rose, he was going to be a big part of this, obviously. I had Derrick Rose leading the Bulls to the top of the division right there with the Pacers. But Derrick Rose went down, so that changed things. Although I'm not shocked that Chicago still made the playoffs. I had the Pacers competing for the division crown once again, being that they were one game away from the finals. I thought Detroit was actually going to make a playoff run. I thought they went all in on this year. Joe Dumars really tried to save his job, and it didn't happen. He just stepped down, I think, yesterday or today. So Joe Dumars had a decent run. He won a championship in Detroit and then kind of proceeded to flame out, to put it mildly, these last several years. But Detroit is on the outside looking in, although watch out for my boy Andre Drummond. He's coming. I told people close to me that Drummond was going to be a dog coming in the NBA, and he like was second in the league in rebounding this year, and he's like 20 years old still. So keep an eye on him going forward. And the Bucks, I had the Milwaukee Bucks as being arguably the worst team in the league, and they proved me right there. So let's hop out of that division. And we'll move on to the Southwest Division, where obviously the Miami Heat was going to win. The only team that I had competing with them was the Washington Wizards. That turned out to be correct, as the Wizards made the playoffs and finished second in the division. Although Charlotte was right there too, so I'll give Charlotte some credit. I didn't have Charlotte making the playoffs. I was wrong about that. And Atlanta, I said in the piece that Atlanta, you didn't know if they were coming or going, but they might kind of get stuck in the middle. And that's exactly what happened. They made the playoffs, but they got stuck at the 8th seed. So, but the way Indiana's playing, who knows? Maybe they might give them some competition. Miami's still obviously the best team in the division. And they didn't let the free agency thing with LeBron and Bosch and those guys freak them out too much. They've played far from their best ball, but that was to be expected, I think, going for a fourth straight finals run with this big three group. I think that most people would have taken 54 wins, 50 whatever they end up with, 55 wins, and the number two seed. I think they'll stroll merrily into the playoffs with that, even with enough room to twirl a cane as I walk through, as Stewie Griffin once said. But yeah, anyway, the playoff teams, as I throw random cartoon references in the podcast. Playoff teams. I had 5 out of 8 in the East. I had Miami. I had Chicago. I had Indy. I had Brooklyn. And I had Washington. The teams I got wrong were the Knicks, the Cavaliers, and the Pistons, who were replaced by the Hawks, Bobcats, and Raptors. So there you got it. 5 out of 8. That was not quite as good as I would have hoped to have done on the Eastern Conference. But I made up some ground in the West, though. I made up some ground in the West, though, and I'm proud of myself because the Western Conference was the hard conference. Nobody knew who was going to make the playoffs out West. The West was the impossible conference, and guess what? Your boy went 8 for 8 on the Western Conference playoff teams. Looking at the Pacific Division first, I had the Clippers winning that division again, which they did. I had Golden State being a playoff team, which they are. I had the Lakers being garbage, which they were. And the Kings, same thing with them. Even though I'm a big DeMarcus Cousins supporter, I didn't think they had much happening. I did think Sacramento got a steal in the draft with Ben McLemore, but Ben McLemore really didn't play well this year. And we'll get to the rookie class in a little bit later, though. And Phoenix was the big shocker out of this division, of course. The thing with Phoenix, though, was nobody had them being this good. Myself included. So there's no shame in me getting the Suns wrong, because everybody thought the Suns were going to be a top five lottery team this year, and they turned it on everybody. They turned the whole league on its ear the way that they played this year. So, and they ended up winning like 49-50 games almost, and they're still going to miss the playoffs, y'all. That's the crazy part. So I think Phoenix deserves a lot of credit for the season they had, but it's still not going to be enough for them, unfortunately. And they're a really fun team to watch. So I was rooting for them to make the playoffs. Once I saw that they were competing and they were for real, I was really rooting for them to make it. But it wasn't meant to be. It wasn't in the cards this year. But they didn't get any contribution from Alex Len, who was the 5th pick in the draft last year. And so they're going to add another lottery pick to that this year. I mean, they're good. They're going to be good, y'all. They're going to be good. If things continue down the road they're going, Phoenix is going to be all right. So, and good for their fans, because they deserve it after some of the years and some of the ownership decisions that have gone down of late. The Clippers, though, were the team to beat in this division. I still had the Clippers. I've been a Clipper supporter because, again, as I referenced before in the past on the podcast, my boy is Chris Paul. That's my favorite player to watch. He's my favorite current player in the league. And I believe in that dude. And so I knew the Clippers were going to be right there once again. And here they are with the third best record in the West. They may possibly dip to... Or no. They may possibly jump up to number two. They still have the chance of doing it. I don't think they will, but it's an outside chance, I believe, on the last night of the season. And did I just see Vince Carter throw down a reverse dunk? My God. Vince Carter had a great year, y'all. I don't even know how he's doing it, because he's just kind of like a forgotten man, but he turned back the clock on Memphis just now. But anyway, I digress. My biggest beef with the LA Clippers was they didn't address the big man situation. I thought that Blake and DeAndre together were not enough to get them over the hump against the teams with solid front courts. And I was stunned that they didn't really address this issue. Well, in fact, they re-signed Ryan Hollins and they signed Antoine Jameson, and that was it. And B.J. Mullins, like, that was going to be it. And I'm like, no, that's terrible. So they ended up scrapping that idea. They didn't play Jameson at all. In fact, I think they traded him, and then he ended up getting waived. I think his career might be done. Brian Hollins barely gets any minutes. They ended up bringing in Big Baby Davis midseason, and they brought in Hedo Turkoglu to play the Lamar Odom role. But those guys, they don't need to be getting any minutes either, really. I mean, especially Big Baby, the way he's carrying on right now. He's being a real distraction for that team. Doc Rivers, who coached him back at Boston, can't even seem to control him anymore. So stay away from Big Baby altogether, unless he's really got his head on straight. But Doc Rivers, to his credit, he, in his first year in LA, he's managed to maximize the potential that was there with Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. Blake Griffin's now a top five MVP candidate for most people. He would probably be third on my ballot, and on my hypothetical ballot that I don't have just yet, but in due time. DeAndre Jordan, on the other hand, I think he could be even the Defensive Player of the Year candidate, and I think he was getting some all-star love at one point early in the season, and he led the league in rebounding this year. He almost averaged almost 14 boards a game this year to go on like with 11 or 12 points, and even bumped up his free throw shooting percentage to like 42%, so round of applause for DeAndre for that. Moving to the Northwest Division, or as I like to call it, the Big Baby Yeezus Division. Again, we had OKC coming out that division and holding it down, which they did. And I had Minnesota being improved, but still missing the playoffs, which they did. I had Portland being improved and making the playoffs. And I had Denver falling out of the playoffs because somebody's going to have to fall out. And all that stuff came to fruition. So Denver really didn't have it this year. They just lost. They lost their coach. They lost their general manager, and they lost their best player. Like how? And their general manager was like executive of the year. Their coach was, I think, coach of the year last year, and their best player was Iguodala, and I think their second best player was Gallinari. Well, Gallinari tore up his knee. Iguodala walked for nothing, and then they lost their coach and the general manager. How are they going to make the playoffs? They had no shot. They never stood a chance. Word to Adam Clark. Portland, though, I like Portland coming into the year. Remember at the start of the year when they were like, they had the best record in the NBA for like the first 2 months or whatever it was? And I said on the podcast back in late December, early January, like, let's see when the schedule gets a little thicker. Let's see if they fall back down to reality a little bit. And that's exactly what happened. So, but they still managed to wind up with the fifth seed in the West, I believe. So that's pretty impressive for a team like the Blazers, who didn't even make the playoffs last year. They had to get LaMarcus Aldridge healthy. They got him back. They went out. They got Mo Williams. They got Robin Lopez. They added him to the Rookie of the Year. Wes Matthews and Nick Batum. That's a good core. They got Terry Stotts as coach. He was a little unsure of how he was going to pan out, but he's done well. And Portland is a good team. And I'm highly intrigued by the Blazers-Rockets first-round matchup. I think that's a really interesting series. I think a lot of people – I get the vibe that a lot of people are penciling in Houston in the second round. I'm not so sure about that, though, but we'll talk more about that on our playoff preview piece coming. And like I said, there was a lot of buzz for the Timberwolves going into the season about them being a playoff team. I didn't see that, though. They were going to be improved, but I still didn't see it. And Kevin Love, man, he's a stat monster. I don't know if there's anything else there, though. And until further notice, that's kind of how I have to look at him. He may need to just up and get up out of there. But we'll see. I have love for the small market teams, though, so I don't want to just bury him just like that. But and then obviously the Utah Jazz. How could I forget? Well, you know what? I probably should have forgot because the Utah Jazz were trash this year. Although in the preseason article, I said that the Utah Jazz didn't have a snowball's chance in hell at winning 20 games. And look at this. They won 24 games. Look at that. You're making me look dumb. That's an extension of Trey Burke, who made me look dumb in the tournament last year when I said he was a little bit overrated, basically, and he balled out in the entire tournament, took his team to the championship game. And I kind of said the same thing again in the article here, that Trey Burke was not that great, or it was hard for me to envision him being a real impact player in the NBA. He had a decent rookie season, but I think he had an overrated rookie season because I'm hearing people give him even Rookie of the Year buzz. Like, I think Ernie Johnson last night or somebody on TV said that he was like third on their Rookie of the Year ballot. And I'm like, really? Okay, go back and look at Trey Burke's game logs. He's had some horrible games this year. But the Thunder obviously were the team to beat, and they're right there at the top, so that there's no shock there. But they need Russell Westbrook to ball, and I'm as big of a Russell Westbrook defender as you'll find. Everybody that trashes Westbrook or doesn't think that he has, that thinks that he detracts from Kevin Durant to the point that it's going to prevent Oklahoma City from winning a title, I don't rock with those people. Russell Westbrook is an amazing player. He's one of the top seven players in the NBA right now, probably. And they're not going to win an NBA championship without him healthy and playing well. And if that means he takes a few shots away from Durant, so be it. But that's a good thing, because Kevin Durant shouldn't be shooting 35 times a game, regardless of how many Kobe Bryant fans and Michael Jordan fans say that he should. But Kevin is great, don't get me wrong. But I don't like my star player shooting that much. And Kevin Durant's a willing passer too. He can't. He's not going to score 100 points a game. Somebody else has to pick up the slack. So let it be my man Russell Westbrook. Southwest Division, last division, real quick. I had the Spurs. I said the Spurs would win their typical 55 games. They would just cruise on through. Well, guess what? The Spurs won, I believe, 62 games. If my computer would cooperate, I'd tell you. They're 62-19 with one game to play. They're playing as we speak, or as I speak. They have a chance to go 63-19. And the Spurs are just a machine. They're just unbelievable. I had the Rockets as a playoff team. I like what they did in the offseason. Obviously, bringing in Dwight Howard was a huge feather in the cap. Dallas, I thought Dallas was going to be improved, and they were. I had Dallas sneaking in as a playoff team, as a team that dipped out last year, but I had them climbing back in it this year, and I was right about that one. I was proud of that call. And Dallas is playing Memphis right now, and I think Dallas has a chance to wind up at the 7th seed. I think they're at the 7th seed now, and if they win, they lock it up, but I think Memphis has a chance to leapfrog them, something like that. And that's why I can't really get into a playoff preview right now, because the seedings aren't set yet, so... Again, stay tuned to HipHopSportsReport.com for the playoff preview. The Pelicans, they were interesting this year. At least Anthony Davis was. I can't say much for the rest of the team, but Anthony Davis is a stud. I didn't have him making the playoffs just yet, but next year. Matter of fact, I want to put him in next year, man, but the West is so tough. I want to say that they'll be there next year, but I just can't right now. We'll have to see what they do in the offseason. But Anthony Davis is real deal Holyfield. I think we all know that. And the Memphis Grizzlies, the team that I kind of detest, I think they're boring to watch. They're a really good team. I really respect them. I just think they're boring to watch, and I kind of didn't want them to make the playoffs over the Suns, even though midway through the season when the Grizzlies were out of it like by like 5 games or whatever, and the Suns were in the playoffs at like a 6 or 7 seed, and I'm like, I think Phoenix is going to fall out, and Memphis is going to get there, and that's kind of what happened. I think I had tweets that corroborate that story if you think I'm lying. I'm just saying. But Memphis is a good team. And some people are saying, you know, well, maybe they'll get the Spurs again. It'll be like a few years ago when they knocked out the Spurs in the first round as, I think, an 8 seed. But San Antonio beat them 4-4 this year. So, I mean, what do you want me to say? I don't see Memphis getting out the first round this year. There's a little tidbit. But, again, I'm a little anti-Memphis, if you want to call it that. I mean, I respect them again, but I just don't see it there. But the West playoff teams, again, as predicted on the site, Houston, Clippers, Mavericks, Blazers, Thunder, Grizz, Warriors, Spurs went 8-for-8 there. So that turned out pretty well. As for our HHSR NBA awards for the season, I'll move through pretty quick. Sixth Man of the Year. I actually wanted to give Sixth Man of the Year to Gerald Green out of Phoenix because he was awesome this year. But then I saw that he started 47 games. So if he started more games than he didn't, then he's not really a sixth man. So he's out of the running. So I went with Jamal Crawford out of the Clippers. I mean, Jamal Crawford's a professional sixth man. That's what he does. He's a sixth man assassin. So I don't have any problem giving him that award. Most improved player, I did give it to Goran Dragic, though. I gave Phoenix a couple of looks here. I gave Dragic. Dragic is getting all NBA consideration this year, and he averaged, like, what, 12 points a game last year? I think he was under 10 for his career, and he kind of transformed Phoenix with his play. You got to give him some respect. So, most improved player, I went with Dragic. Rookie of the Year, I went with nobody because the rookies were just that garbage. They earned it. I mean, Michael Carter Williams, his numbers look good, but he had a severe slump during the season. He can't shoot, and the 76ers were historically bad for much of the season, so it's hard to give him any love. Victor Oladipo was in the conversation, but he didn't really do anything that impressive, especially, I think he was more impressive like in November than he was. I think he probably hit the wall, and I haven't heard his name at all in any kind of positive context in recent months. So, I mean, who was really balling as a rookie? I like the Plumlee kid out of Brooklyn, but, I mean, no, none of the rookies were that great, so, you know, forget the Rookie of the Year. Just hang on to it for next year, and then give out 2 Rookie of the Year awards for next year. Coach of the Year, I went Jeff Hornacek, giving Suns some more love. Some people had Popovich. Popovich is such a good coach. He's like a conductor, of an orchestra. So a conductor doesn't even need to be there. I was in the band. I played music in high school. You don't need a conductor there, technically. To once you learn how to play a song, the conductor doesn't need to be up there. I mean, he helps, or he or she helps, but they don't need to be there. So Popovich is that good. I feel like if Popovich got up and walked off and didn't even coach the Spurs in the playoffs, they would still get like win two rounds. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because they've just cultivated that type of atmosphere. They're just a well-oiled machine in every sense of the word. So not to diminish his coaching job this year, but I just don't feel like, I feel like his team is so veteran and they played under him for so long that they know what to do. And people gave a lot of credit to Tom Thibodeau and the Bulls. I think he deserves a lot of credit after they traded Luol Deng and everything, and they looked like they were going to fall apart, and Tibbs really didn't allow that. Tibbs and Joakim Noah, who I have as the defensive player of the year, by the way. Noah, that is. So I think Thibodeau deserves some look, but I give it to Hornacek, man. If you weigh, even though Phoenix didn't make the playoffs, if you weigh the expectations up against their performance this year, Phoenix, I think they blew everybody out of the water, even the really good teams, because everybody expected them to be good. But with what Phoenix was expected to do and what they really did, and the way Hornacek ran that offense, I'm giving him the award, man. He just deserves it. And then MVP is between KD and LeBron, and I went with my man Kevin Durant. To people close to me, you know, this far predates the website, but people close to me, I said back when he was a freshman at Texas that Kevin Durant was going to be the next superstar player in the NBA. And by superstar, I meant on Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade status. That's what I meant by that. Not just an all-star, but I mean like cream of the crop type of guy. I said that when he was at Texas, and that was about 7 years ago. And here we are, man. He's going to win it. This is his year. He's going to win MVP. He probably wouldn't have won it had Russell Westbrook not missed half the season, but that's what it took. And we all saw how special he really is. LeBron is right there. We take LeBron James for granted, man. LeBron is still the best player. LeBron is still better than Kevin Durant, but Kevin Durant had a better season. And don't buy that nonsense that, and I love Bill Simmons, but don't buy that nonsense that he sells when he says that the MVP award, more often than not, should go to just the best player by default, regardless of what they did that season. That's garbage. They have these awards on a season-by-season basis. So even though LeBron's the best player, he has to go out and earn the MVP award. Just like the year Derrick Rose beat out LeBron a few years ago. Of course, LeBron was better than Derrick Rose, but Derrick Rose's team won like 60-something games, and Derrick Rose is off the charts. He deserved it. This year, Kevin Durant deserves it. So, and it's funny because Simmons, I read his work all the time, and he's kind of backpedaled on that this year. But even midway through the season, he was saying the same thing, and I'm like, no, if Kevin Durant deserves it, he deserves it. So, and then quickly running through the all-NBA teams. First team I have LeBron, KD, Noah, James Harden, Chris Paul. Chris Paul was a little tough because he missed a bunch of games with an injury, but I felt like he still deserved it. I mean, if you combine the defense with the leadership and just... He's special. He's just a coach on the floor. Chris Paul is everything you want in a point guard, and so that's why I have him there. Second team, all NBA. I have Blake Griffin, Stephen Curry, Dwight Howard, LaMarcus Aldridge, who doesn't really seem to be getting a lot of love in the postseason award conversation, but he still averaged like 22-11 on a top four seeded team, a top five seeded team in a Western Conference. So I think that deserves a little kudos for him. So shout out to LaMarcus Aldridge on his season. Again, I had Blake, Steph Curry, Aldridge, Dwight Howard at center, quietly put together another solid season. And Paul George, everybody's off Paul George because he sucked the last month or two of the season. And I get that. But that doesn't mean what he did in the first half of the season doesn't count. So Paul George deserves to be all NBA. I got him on the second team. And for the third team, I got Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Goran Dragic, Dirk Nowitzki, and another guy that's not getting enough credit, Al Jefferson, on my third team. He's been special this year for the Bobcats. He was a great pickup for them. So there you have it. I didn't do an all-NBA defensive team, or at least I didn't do it in preparation for this podcast. All-NBA defense is such a tough thing to do. I didn't feel like I watched enough basketball to make that distinction, because you really have to pay attention to defense, and people don't do it. And people just take defense for granted, and they just go off name recognition, and I didn't want to do that. So maybe sometime down the line. But yeah, Defensive Player of the Year, obviously, with Joakim Noah, I think he was a slam dunk, no pun intended, for that award. So there you have it, y'all. Season in review for basketball. I love the NBA season, y'all. And the NBA second season, the playoffs, are going to be so much better. I said halfway through the year that this is the worst season I'd ever seen, or at least in 15 years. And I think the season has come around. the NBA has come around, and I'm now excited for these playoffs. I didn't think I would be, but I'm now excited for these playoffs. What time is it right now? It's like 7:50 Central Time. So we're talking about a little less than 72 hours. Yeah. I would yell at the Bart Scott, "Can't wait," but I'm not that corny.
Find your dreams come true, and I wonder if you know what it means, what it means. And I wonder if you know what it means, what it means. And I wonder if you know what it means to find your dreams. And I wonder, I've been waiting all this my whole life, life.
You know what's crazy, y'all? I was riding up to Milwaukee, Wisconsin this past weekend, and I went to go visit my cousin, my cousins, and my future sister-in-law. And I was just riding in the car with my lady, man, and we were just playing some old music, and I threw some Kanye West on the iPod, on the iPhone, and I had not heard the Graduation album in a while. And so I played that record right there. That record came on, I wonder, and it touched my spirit. Like, I hadn't heard it in like three or four full years since I'd heard that song. And I heard it come. I knew a dope track was coming up next, and I couldn't think of what it was, though, because it'd been so long since I heard the album. And, like, that's what music's supposed to do. It's supposed to hit you in your soul, in your heart. And I heard that song, and I was like, damn, that's going on the podcast. So, had to throw that on there. Kanye West, I wonder. But, and going up to my trip to Milwaukee, I actually went to the local theater with my cousins, and we went to go see the movie Draft Day. Now, for those of you who don't know, Draft Day is a movie starring Kevin Costner and Jennifer Garner. Kevin Costner plays the general manager of the Cleveland Browns, my childhood favorite football team as a child and as an adult. Yeah, I'm from Cleveland originally.
Cleveland is the city where we come from, so run.
Like that, y'all. Some of y'all know that, some of y'all don't, but you do now. And making a movie about the Cleveland Browns was cool. It was really cool. I mean, I thought that this could possibly have you know, that movie, like Major League effect, like Major League had on the Indians. Like Major League came out with Charlie Sheen and Wesley Snipes, and then they came out Major League 2, but shortly thereafter, like the Indians, they were cool for a little bit, and then they got really good, and then, like, a couple years later, they were in the World Series, and so, and then they went back to the World Series, and like, they didn't win, but that's not the point. But I was hoping that Draft Day has a similar effect on the Browns franchise. I don't know what it is, but our sports teams are so bad in Cleveland that they make movies about us being terrible, but as a fan, you still enjoy it, and so I went to see Draft Day. Now, if you haven't seen Draft Day, I'm going to spoil it right now, so fast forward the podcast to the last couple minutes, because I'm about to get into some details about the movie. But my gears were turning as I watched it, and I thought to myself, who were some winners and losers from the movie Draft Day? Winners and losers from the movie Draft Day. So here are my winners, the list of people or things that won out in this movie. First of all, you had the city of Cleveland. That's a winner. Cleveland still kind of gets bashed in the public eye, and our sports teams get raked over the coals constantly, deservedly so. But Cleveland is a city that has, of late, produced a lot of movies. A lot of movies have been shot in Cleveland. I'm talking like Avengers, the Captain America joint, the Alex Cross flick with that was Tyler Perry flick. Then you had Draft Day was shot in Cleveland, and there was like a bunch other. There's like five other movies that I'm not thinking of right now, but all of a sudden Cleveland's like a mini Hollywood in the Midwest. Like, I don't know what it is, but I think it's because the downtown has that kind of old school downtown kind of vibe to it. But so that was a big win for Cleveland, and it means more money for the city and more money for the community, even if it does mean shutting down the highways every once in a while or whatever, or the streets downtown. It's worth it. I mean, it's putting people to work, and you know, I got buddies of mine that are getting credits as extras in movies and stuff. It's cool. So a big win for the city of Cleveland. Another winner is going with your gut. That's what happened in the movie. Again, spoiler alert coming right now. Kevin Costner goes with his gut. He has a gut instinct at the beginning of the flick to draft Vontae Mack out of Ohio State, and he ended up doing that a little bit earlier than people expected, but he went with his gut, and it turned out to be the right call, even though he did it in a roundabout way. So going with your gut was a big win, because Kevin Costner stuck to his guns, and it worked out. Also, Arian Foster was a big winner in this flick, because Arian Foster, who is a running back for the Houston Texans, one of the better running backs in the league, you know, he got injured halfway through the season. I guess he has some time on his hands. Why not shoot a movie? So he goes and he becomes Ray Jennings on the silver screen, a troubled running back out of Florida State, has some little off-the-field issues, but is the son of a former Cleveland Brown played by Terry Crews, and he ends up getting drafted by the Browns in the first round. So it worked out for Arian Foster, and maybe this will launch an acting career for Arian Foster, who's really a bright dude. He's really a thoughtful guy and a snazzy dresser, if you ever seen him outside of football. Did I just say snazzy on the podcast? Yes, I did. And then another big win or winner from Draft Day, knocking up your coworkers. You wouldn't think so, right? I mean, getting involved romantically with a coworker doesn't sound like a good idea, but don't tell that to Sonny Weaver Jr. he knocked up Jennifer Garner at the beginning of the movie, and it didn't go over well. So he finds out at the beginning of the movie, he doesn't really celebrate it. He's kind of like a little weary about it. We're overlooking the fact that he's like 20 years older than Jennifer Garner, so good for him. And I don't really find Jennifer Garner attractive, but I think she was like just attractive enough for this role because she was kind of like believable. Like she's like Cleveland attractive almost, I guess you could say. I don't know. But so you had Jennifer Garner being in the movie, and then she gets knocked up by Kevin Costner's character, the general manager, right at the beginning, but they work together. She's like the go-to salary cap person for the Browns. And yet she plays a big role in the movie because she gives him all this sage advice throughout the entire flick. And every time he has a big decision to make, he goes and he finds Jennifer Garner. He pulls her in the room. He pulls her in a closet. He pulls her, you know, on the practice field. And he's always talking to her. And she gives him great advice. And it ends up working out. So who knew? Knocking up your coworkers, it can have its positive consequences. I don't know. It just does. It can have a positive effect. As far as losers in the movie, I wouldn't quite say the Seattle Seahawks because they end up getting the player that they wanted, Bo Callahan, but I would say the Jacksonville Jaguars were losers because they were just made to look stupid. I mean, they had a rookie general manager, and Sonny Weaver, he manages to take advantage of the rookie GM in Jacksonville, has him in a little panic moment on draft night. Gets him to make a panic trade. Sonny Weaver then turns around, flips that back with Seattle, bada bing, bada boom, and it all worked out for the Browns. But the Jags were left looking kind of stupid. And in real life, we don't even know that that's necessarily a dumb move, that trade that they made. But in that moment, Jacksonville was made to look like the bumbling idiots of the film. So that was a loss for them. Which is funny because the Jacksonville Jaguar fans and I apparently have some kind of back and forth going because I've written comments about the Jags negatively on the website before, and I've posted stuff to Twitter that's negative about the Jags, and I always seem to get backlash from Jacksonville fans. It's funny to me, but I got love for you, Jacksonville. It was a bad look for owners. NFL owners didn't look too good because you had. Who was it? I forget the name of the owner, but he was made to look like a total douchebag. He didn't take his shades off the entire movie. He was up Kevin Costner's ass the whole time. And NFL owners, they look like tyrants. That's what they look like based off of this dude's character. So, and he was telling them to make moves that weren't even necessarily in the best interest of the team, and which some owners do, but a lot of owners don't do. So owners were made to look bad. And then getting back to the Jacksonville Jaguars trade that the Browns made, second round picks. That was a loser in this movie. So they had no value. The Browns were just throwing them away. They just threw away 3 second rounders to Jacksonville. So apparently second round picks are losers. And in real life, the Browns used their second round supplemental pick on Josh Gordon. So they threw away a real second round draft pick, but it all worked out in the end because they got Josh Gordon, who was the best receiver in football last year. So I don't know. Make of that. Take that as you want with second round picks. I don't know. And then sports interns. I've worked in sports before. The intern in this movie was a total nerd. He was made to look like a moron. So say no more. I mean, sports interns and young employees, they is not a good look for them in this movie either. So there you have it. Just a few winners and losers. And then the one that was most, that was, I felt was undecided, was the Cleveland Browns themselves. The Browns. I thought that was undecided whether or not they came out looking good or looking bad in this movie, because they look cool because they won, but like the climax of the movie is they had a good draft. But you don't know how that's going to play out in real life. But the movie wasn't called, you know, Draft Day and the subsequent NFL season. That's too long of a title. It's Draft Day. So the movie ends, and then we don't know how these players really panned out. And furthermore, the Browns in real life have sucked at the draft for eons. So we don't know how the real life Browns are going to now react. Are they going to try to match the popularity of the movie and try to make a big splash like they did in the movie? Are they going to then trade up to number one? That was the rumor this morning that I heard on Cleveland Sports Talk Radio, was that they were in talks with moving up to number one with the Texans, possibly to take Johnny Manziel. I don't know. I don't know if that's true. It could just be a smokescreen. You can't believe anything this time of year with regards to rumors in the NFL draft. But the point is that we don't know how the Browns are going to capitalize on this momentum. We don't know how they're going to We don't know how Ray Farmer, first time general manager, is going to stack up compared to what Sonny Weaver Jr. did, the fictitious Ray Farmer, in this movie. We don't know how it's going to pan out. If the real Browns continue to stink and the movie Browns turn out to be good, then that's just one more joke to add in the holster for fans everywhere that like to hate on Cleveland. So I don't know, man. We'll see how it all plays out with what the Browns end up looking like in the end. But again, I enjoyed the movie. I had a lot of fun watching Draft Day, and I had a lot of fun hanging out with my cousins. And I want to see it again. It was a dope movie. I mean, the part where Vontae Mack gets drafted, man, that was my favorite part of the movie. And so, yeah. Thus, officially ending the spoiler alert segment of the podcast right there. So, we are about to head up out of here, y'all. One thing I did want to point out. You may have noticed on the podcast this evening that there were a lot of old school kind of hip hop beats that you may or may not have been familiar with. If for those of you that are big hip hop heads, you know that all those beats came off of Illmatic. And it was on April 19th in 1994 that Illmatic, Nas's first album, dropped to rave reviews and is now considered to be a classic album in rap history. By some accounts, the greatest rap album of all time. And so I love Illmatic. And to pay homage to Illmatic, I'm gonna go ahead and we're gonna drop a little bit of Nas as we get up out of here. But I wanted to make sure that we play all of these songs or we played beats from Illmatic exclusively on this week's podcast, y'all. So again, thank you for listening. I appreciate all of my listeners, my new Twitter followers, my new Twitter family. Thank you. Please go out and subscribe to the podcast. The preseason podcast of the year is now on iTunes. Hit us up on Twitter at HHSReport. And please go to the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. We're going to have a playoff preview coming soon. We're going to have an article about Nas and what Illmatic's legacy is 20 years after it dropped. Check that out, y'all. We love you. Peace. Is contacted, I attract clientele. My mic check is life or death, breathing a sniper's breath. I exhale the yellow smoke of Buddha through righteous steps, deep like the shining, sparkle like a diamond, sneaker Uzi on the island, and my army jacket lining hit the earth like a comet invasion. Nas is like the Afrocentric Asian, half man, half amazing, cause in my physical I can't express through song, delete stress like Motrin, then extend strong. I drink my wet with Medusa, give her shotguns in hell, from the spliff that I lift and inhale, it ain't hard to tell. Again, wisdom be leaking out my grapefruit true. I dominate break loops, giving mics ministry cycles, streets disciple. I rock beats this mega trifle and groove even smoother than moves by Villanova. You're still a soldier, I'm like Sly Stone and Cobra, packing like a roster in the weed spot. Vocals are squeezed Glocks, MCZs drop, though they need not to sneak. My poetry's deep, I never fail. Nas's rap should be locked in a cell. It ain't hard to tell.